I've been going over them for like now, but about a week now. That's all I'm saying.
Okay, I'll be happy to explain that. It's quite a beautiful idea, but it is complex. So, just also, so if you're wondering, you're trying to go back into your memory, your notes, and trying to see what to find. So, just to know what we had said, we discussed that Buchanan had three chakiras, and I said what they were, and about how they interlocked with each other, which is a part of the beauty of that particular essay. However, only one of them did we really spend any time on, and we spent some pretty significant time on one. There was a second one that we had thought we might get to spend time on, and time had not yet allowed. Be happy even just today, if that's what you want, to tell you a little bit more about it. As far as Chazara is concerned, all we did was to say what it was. We didn't spend a lot of time on it. We said what it was, and we explained how they interlock. So what I can do now is review that. So let's say again what we said, and say the three questions and explain how they connect. And if you'd like, I'm happy to expand a little bit on the one that we didn't expand. It all depends on what the priority is for now. So you can tell me what you want me to do. But first, what are the three questions? So essentially, the question was to explain Rabbi Chanan's three-part chakira. So essentially, the issue was like this. Three questions, which could be taken in isolation from each other, but ultimately you see that they actually are all interconnected and that they really all line up. Is it Kedai to write on the board? No, it's not Kedai because of the lack of any kind of writing instrument. But we'll see if it's... We'll see, maybe it's not necessary.
Isn't there one in the drawer?
Sorry? What? Holy cow! Look at that! I've never seen so many in one place. Is this where they've always been?
Always.
Wow. But does that, none of them are purple?
Yeah.
No, okay. All right. So then let's we gotta use them. So let's explain the three questions, okay? And you'll see how they line up. So one question is, we know the Gemara says Yesh Koach LaKadavim Ben HaTorah. It's a little bit hard to pin down one line of the Gemara where that's clear. It's a whole little daf in Masechet Yevamos and daf Peites and daf Tzadi where the Gemara talks about this idea that Chazal can be Okir Davim Ben HaTorah. And ultimately, there's a back and forth about whether it's even Bekum Vaseh. Or is it only Sheva Al Tasa? Which, loosely translated, we'll see this is going to be one of the questions. Loosely translated, we could take it to mean that the rabbis may tell us not to do something that we normally should do, but they won't tell us to do something that we should not do. So we know they're not going to tell us to be Mechalel Shabbos. They're not going to tell us to eat treif. But they could tell us to not blow shofar, not take lulav, not wear tzitzis, when shatness is involved, things like that. So the first question concerning this whole principle has to do with the language of the Gemara. The language of the Gemara is pretty intense, right? What does it say? Oh, wait a minute. Luckily we have 20 more. Okay. It was a nice try. You get total credit for that. Maybe it's a graveyard. okay, green, awesome. All right.
What?
Hakor davar v'hatorah. Right. So that's a pretty intense phrase. Right? What does that sound like? You mean they uproot something from the Torah? Right. It sounds like it means it used to be in the Torah, it's not there anymore. That's a very extreme formulation. So question one is that literal? Or is that not so literal? Okay, so question one. Literal or not? Right, so this is the question that we spent a lot of time on. That was the central issue. And we got into three questions. It's the only question we really spent any time on. And we spent a lot of time on it. Right, the issue of, does the mitzvah still exist, for example, if the rabbis tell us not to do it? So if the rabbis say, don't blow shofar on Shabbos, don't wear tzitzis in the Shabbat situation, does the mitzvah continue to exist? And simply they have the authority, the whole chiddush of this idea, if we say the mitzvah still exists, then the whole chiddush of this idea is, even though the mitzvah is still there, and God is still telling us to blow shofar, rabbinic authority is such that we should listen to the rabbis even that far. Even when they're telling us not to follow the Torah, we should obey them. So that's question one. Okay, literal or not. Question two. How do we define? And this is a topic which, if you want, now I can spend a few more minutes telling you things we didn't say the first time. There's a lot to say about this, some of it's quite fascinating wonders, but we just didn't get up to it, so I'm happy to do whatever you'd like. But this question is, what does Sheva Al Tassim mean? What is Sheva Al Tassim? Well, what's the big deal? I just told you what it is, right? It means that if you're acting passively, it's Sheva Al Tassim. Don't blow shofar, that's Sheva Al Tassim. Vimachal Shabbos, that would not be called Sheva Al Tassim. But there are some ambiguous categories. Because we have to be more specific. Are we talking about behavior? It's all about whether you are literally sitting and not doing anything, as opposed to physically doing something. That is what we're referring to. We're judging it based on your active behavior. Or is Sheva Al Tassim essentially a code word for ases versus los ases? If something is categorized as a mitzvah asay, then they can tell you not to do it. If it's categorized as a los ases, then they cannot tell you to do that, to violate that los ases, even if the violation would be something that is passive. So what might some examples of ambiguous categories be? Can you give an example? Yeah? Okay. Because Rav Chanan talks about that, and you read it inside. Very good. Right? So, lo yiro fonei reikam, says the Torah, that if somebody shows up in the Beis HaMikdash without a korban, so now you're not actually doing anything wrong. You are simply missing the korban, but it's a lav. So what category does that go in? Would that be Sheva Al Tassim? Just also to expand on this a little bit, now again, this is stuff we didn't discuss yet, but truth is, it can even make it more of a sukkah topic by expanding on it a little bit now. In addition to examples, which we can try to give some, but the whole concept of distinguishing in this way, of a halachic distinction between Sheva Al Tassim and essays, Loso says, whichever one of these is correct, the issue could be asked, this chakira applies in at least three areas of halach. This is one of them. What are the other two? So one other example is the Gemara Maseches Brachos and Daf Yutes in the base. We're there, which you may have seen in the context of our recent discussions, because that's where the Gemara invokes Lo Sasser in the context of the Rabbanans, and we mentioned it's either a proof of the Rambam or the Ramban, depending on how you read it. Right, you saw this Gemara? You mentioned this Gemara, that the Gemara says that Kavod Abrios, human dignity, is such an important principle that it uproots, or that it overwhelms, even a mitzvah min haTorah. So the Gemara says, it's not true. It's a mitzvah min haTorah. Then we follow the mitzvah min haTorah, even if it impinges on Kavod HaBrios, because we say, Ein Eitzah v'ein Chachma v'ein Tzvunah v'neged Hashem. So then says the Gemara, well, no, what we mean is, we're referring to one specific Isser min haTorah, and that is Lo Sasser. And it's a way of saying that Kavod HaBrios outweighs Dinim D'Rabbanan. So, that could be taken as a proof either for the Rambam or the Ramban, because on the surface it sounds like it's a proof for the Rambam. The Rabbanim are los asus. But the reason the Ramban rallies it for his side is because the language of the Gemara more specifically is kol milsa de Rabbanan asmachuhu akra de los asus. That it's all an asmachta. And what does an asmachta mean? That we saw as a debate. So that Gemara is a battlefield for this issue. And then the Gemara goes on to say that Kavod HaBrios is not only Doche Dinim Derabanan, but it's also Doche Dinim Min HaTorah, if it's Sheva Al Tasa. So in that sugya, it becomes important again. What does Sheva Al Tasa mean? Is Sheva Al Tasa a question of passive versus active behavior? Or is it a factor of category? If it's categorized as an asay, then not doing it would be called sheva al tasa. If it's categorized as a los asay, that's going to bring you into kum v'asay territory regardless of your behavior. So that's the second area where it comes up. Third area where it comes up is very relevant to hilchos sukkah or hilchos sukkos. Because there is a klal in halacha, which is not explicit in the Gemara, but it first appears in the Ramah in Hilchos Lulav. So that's what we're bringing into Masechta Sukkah. That the Gemara does say regarding staka, the Gemara in Ksubas and Avnun, the Gemara says that when it comes to staka, there's a limit to how much staka you should give, an upper limit. We always talk about a lower limit, of a minimum of. But that's more of a minig. But the Gemara says as a din that you should not go above a certain percentage, and that percentage is chomesh, 20%, one-fifth. So that, the Gemara says, about stock. The Ramah quotes this idea regarding mitzvos and hilchos lulav. And the Ramah says that when it comes to a mitzvah, you also are not obligated to spend more than a fifth of your money. But then the Ramah also brings a distinction, which is a little bit controversial. The Ramah's distinction is that, but that's only true if it's a positive mitzvah. If you can't afford a lulav, you can't afford an esrog, and it's going to cost more than a fifth of your money, then you're exempt. But if it's a los asay, if it requires, if it's something that's going to involve a lav, so then you have to spend kol hon beso, you have to spend whatever you have to avoid violating it. So there also, in the sources about that, is again the same question. What do we mean when we make that distinction? Are we talking about active or passive behavior? Or are we talking about something which is categorized as an essay or categorized as a los essay? Just to give an example of that, which will help for example this also, there's a discussion. Let's say somebody comes to you and says they need help. Chaim Ozer talks about this, others talk about this. Let's say someone says they need help for life-saving surgery. And life-saving surgery is going to cost a fortune. And if you're going to help them out, you're going to have to give them everything you have. So none of us do that, right? If we confront such situations, we don't give every cent that we have in order to provide life-saving surgery when the situation comes up. And the question is, why not? Why is that not a violation of lo samor al dam re'echa, which is a law? So if you could save someone's life, it seems to be a lo sasay to not do that. And therefore, maybe we should say you should have to spend every last cent. So that's a question that we're going to struggle with, because the truth is we usually don't spend a fifth of our money towards that either, and that's a complex discussion how to assess that. But that's one of the questions. So one approach is, well, maybe you could at least shift it into the assay category, because even though it's phrased as a lav, lo samor al dam re'echa, but still you would violate that lav by passivity, by not doing anything. And therefore, maybe it's categorized as an essay. It's categorized as an action in this case. Now, again, it's just going to shift you into the 20% column, which is still going to be a lot of money. It's a different discussion, but that's a part of the discussion. Okay, so you understand those three different categories? And those three different areas in halacha where this issue comes up. And we want to know Akiras Davar Min HaTorah, Kavod HaBrios, and spending money on mitzvos. All those three areas distinguish between Sheva Al Tasa and Kumbaseh. And in each area, you have extensive discussions. What do we mean by the term? Is it about asays or los asays, or is it about passive versus active behavior? And we don't necessarily have any reason to assume that one answer affects the other. It could be that in Akiras Davim and HaTorah, it's one thing, and in Kavod HaBrios, it's another thing. And in spending money, it's either one. There's no real reason to assume the answer is the same in all three areas. So the question is asked in these three contexts. Each time it's a discussion, and each time all of these ambiguous categories are a part of it. So we say, for example, you're not allowed to delay a funeral. So delaying it would just be passive if you just don't get to it quickly. But it's a lav. So do we treat that like a los asay? Do we treat that like an asay? Etc., etc. Okay, so you follow this question. So this is question number two. How do we define Sheva Al Tasa? And it's a question which comes up in a few other areas of halacha. Now, I still haven't expanded on it the way I was alluding to. I can still spend more time on this question in a few minutes if you want. It's a lot of very fascinating lumdus in it. The third question he asks is simply, Sheva Al Tasa, this whole distinction, why? Why, conceptually, why do you have such a distinction? If Chazal have this tremendous power, so then let's not hold back. They have the power to contradict the Torah even more than that, let's say. Why should it be that we're drawing this line in the sand out of nowhere? So Bochanan has two theories as to why, and the question is just to understand which of the theories is it, or to pick one of them. So one possibility is to say that essentially there is a difference in severity between a los asay and asay. We assume that a los asay is more chamor than an asay. Why do we assume that, by the way? So kares or any punishment, right? The presence of punishments seems to indicate that that's true, because presumably a more harsh punishment means a more harsh, more severe transgression. And for the most part, mitzvos asay don't have any punishment. So therefore, it makes it sound like los asays are more severe than asays. Now, it's not a perfect point. You could also ask about asay del chalos asay, right? That we could discuss, you know, which, if there's a clash between the two, mitzvah asay wins, and the Ramban has an explanation. If you're going to have to pick and choose what we should pursue, I'm happy to pursue that point too, but it'll take a few minutes. Or we could just like bump all this into the next 10 Sundays and discuss this. It's also fine. I'm happy to pursue all these topics. But that's an interesting question, whether it's so compelling to say that los asays are more chamer than asays, and how do you reconcile that with asay del chalos asay, particularly with the comments the Ramban over there. We can talk about that too. So, nonetheless, it seems to be the assumption that los asays are more severe. So if that's true, maybe that's it. That maybe Chazal, they have power, but the power is limited. They can take on a mitzvah saseh, that much power was vested in them. But a lo saseh, not so much. Or, you could say no, it's not about that. It's simply about the practicalities. That you are stuck in a bad position here. You are between a rock and a hard place. But on the one hand, you have the Torah saying, for example, you better blow shofar. I don't care if it's Shabbos, you better blow shofar. And on the other hand, you have the rabbi saying, oh no, you better not blow shofar. It's Shabbos. So what do? You have a clash. Do you listen to God? Do you listen to the rabbis? So God told you to listen to the rabbis. So what do? So you're stuck in between two irreconcilable positions. So maybe the best approach is keep your head down. As we sometimes say, as a modern expression, a sheval tasa adif, that when you really can't choose what is the safer path, sometimes we say better not to do anything. If you're afraid that you're going to poke a bear either way, so then at least don't do anything. Keep your head down.
It's just following the common path, essentially.
Okay, right. So the truth is you can't escape the fact that you're choosing one way or another. Or they sometimes claim, I don't think this happens to be true in our system, that if you choose not to vote, then you're just voting for the winner. Which happens not to be true if you know how the Electoral College works, but it's a different topic. But you're right that it's clearly not a completely neutral position, but it helps. Anyway, we also say that, you go further this, we say that in war, that a country that stays neutral is not really neutral, is really helping the aggressor, which is also a crucial point. So we don't have any illusions that keeping your head down is not picking a side, but at least it seems a little bit less offensive. Okay, so if your father asks you to do something and your mother tells you don't you dare do it, so you find yourself in a conflict, and if you don't do it, so then, okay, maybe you're kind of siding with your mother, but at the same time, you can say, listen, I can't deal with this, and I'm keeping my head down, and it's somewhat less offensive. So is that what's happening here? Are we basically saying you're stuck, and therefore stay out of it? So those are his three questions. Now, if you think about it, the three questions are all in a straight line. They all line up because they all require each other. That if you say it's literal, so let's put that in this column. Yes, it's literal. Mitzvah is gone. Right? So if you take that position, no more mitzvah to blow shofar on Shabbos. So if that's the case, so then we say the rabbi has literally uprooted the mitzvah. So then maybe you could say it has to do with a power limitation. Why is there a sheval tasa? Because they can remove a positive mitzvah from the Torah that doesn't require as much power. And a losa say would require more. So then this can be based on power limitation. If that's what it's about, so then it has to do with the fact that los aseis are considered to be more chamer than aseis. Right, really, this answer belongs, in this column. Power limit as the reason. And therefore, what's the definition? It's a categorical definition. So the definition is aseis. We're talking about mitzvah aseis as opposed to los aseis. If you say it the other way, not literal, mitzvah is still there, but the rabbi said don't do it. So then you could say, okay, so why am I doing sheva otasa? Because I have a conflict. What we said before about keeping your head down. In this column, there's no reason to keep your head down. The mitzvah's gone. God's not telling you to blow shofar. So keeping your head down only makes sense in this column when there's an actual conflict between the two. So what's the reason? Keep head down. Now, if the issue is keeping your head down, stay out of it. So then what's the definition of sheva altasa? It's all about behavior. It's not about whether we call it nase or los ase. It's about, are you doing anything? Are you sitting on your thumbs? Or sitting on your hands, whatever the expression, sitting and twiddling your thumbs? Then that's called the sheva altasa. Whatever, it's a lav, it's not a lav. But if you're not doing anything, that's called sheva altasa. And if you're doing something, that would be called kumviase. Okay, so that's essentially Rav Yochanan's structure here. So you see how the three questions all connect. Now, we then went on to say that it also seems pretty clear, and this is a point that I've never really seen pointed out anywhere else for some reason, but I think it seems very, very blatant, that this whole machlokas, these two questions we're saying ties into this first question, and this first question, which is the one we spent a lot of time on, that this is the machlokas, the Nesivis and Rav Yosef Engel. Right, the question of, can drabanans affect reality, or are they just commandments to us as individuals? That's essentially the same question here. Right? And if you recall, the approach within the Nesivis and those who interpret him a certain way is that Chazal can tell us what to do, but they can't change the world. And therefore, there's no such thing as an Isser Cheftza midrabanan. But according to Rav Yosef Engel, God endorses what the rabbis do, and therefore it does change reality. And there could be an Isra Cheftza midrabanan. So too, can the Torah get rewritten? So according to the Nesivis, what would you say? No, right? Because they can tell us what to do, but they can't change anything else. So essentially, that's this comment. That they can say, listen, you don't blow shofar on Shabbos, then you're obligated to listen. Despite the fact that the Torah still commands us to blow shofar, even on Shabbos. Well, according to Yosef Engel, that God signs on to whatever the rabbis do, so then no, there's no more mitzvah to blow shofar on Shabbos. So it seems to me very clear that the two machlokasin are completely kafta v'ferach inside each other. And that's essentially the whole issue here. And it ties into the whole question of all of Dinim D'Rabbanan. Since these three questions are all connected, so the whole issue fits neatly into that parameter. So any questions about that? Leib, is that clear? Does that clarify the issues? Now, again, it's up to you to spend a few more minutes talking about the Sheva Altasa issue. You want to hear something cool for a few minutes about that? Yeah. All right. So there is a beautiful other Lashutoso that the question is like this. There is a Gemara in the Seches Ksubis on Dav Gimel Midbeis Dalet Amud Aleph, which talks about a very sad situation. This part is not so nice. A very sad situation the Gemara talks about. Let's say you have a wedding that's right about to happen. Everything is in place. You've no turning back in terms of the catering expenses. Everything is about to happen. And the father of the chassan and the mother of the kala, for some reason the Gemara gives specifically those two examples. So one of them passes away. The parent of the chassan and kala passes away. So now you have, unfortunately, both a wedding and a funeral that have to happen at the same time. So the Gemara says that you do the wedding first, and the funeral takes place afterwards. So now you have another question. You have Sheva Brachos and Shiva that are both supposed to happen at the same time. So the din is, Sheva Brachos happens first, and Shiva waits until afterwards. So as far as we understand those concepts, it makes a lot of sense, because we, Lahalacha, we assume that Shiva is a din d'Rabbanan, and Sheva Brachos is also a din d'Rabbanan. So the rabbis made both of these concepts, so they decided how it should be. They decided that we should have Shiva after Sheva Brachos. But some of the Rishonim were concerned, because the Rishonim asked the question, again, it doesn't really line up with our halachic position today, but the Rishonim asked, there is a minority view in the Rishonim, the Rambam and the Rif, that Avelus Yom Rishon is min HaTorah. So it's one thing to say, if all of Shiva is Rabbanan, so Chazal, when they decided the rules, they said, push off all of Shiva till after Sheva Brachos. But if the first day of Shiva is a din min haTorah, so how are we allowed to say, let's wait until after Shavu Brachos to have the Shiva? At least for that first day, how could that first day work? Everyone follow the question? So the Ran and the Rashba over there in Ksuvis, they both say the answer is Akiras Davar Min HaTorah. It's Din Min HaTorah, but the rabbis undid it. Now, parenthetically, this is interesting because it's a discussion to be had. Why do the rabbis remove something from HaTorah? Well, what triggers Akiras Davar Min HaTorah? So until now, we've given examples mostly about Hefsid, Nisr, right? So we say, don't blow shofar because we're worried you'll come to be Mechal Shabbos. So we're worried about some Avera, so the rabbis are Okar Davar Min HaTorah. Don't wear tzitzis with shatness because we're worried it'll be shatness without tzitzis. We're worried about Averos, so we say, remove the mitzvah. This is a different application, because this is motivated apparently by Hefsid Mamon, that the expenses of the wedding have been already invested and it's too far to turn back. So because of that, Chazal were makel, took a step to protect the Mamon of Klal Yisrael. So it's just interesting also to note that this is an added step in the discussion of what could justify Akiras Davar Min HaTorah. But in any event, the Ran and the Rashba both say that that's the answer here. But there is a subtle but important difference in how the Ran and the Rashba present it. According to the Ran, Chazal were okir this first day of Avelus Min HaTorah. But, says the Ran, says the Ran, don't have any parties that day. You don't have to observe Avelus. But the active partying of Shavu Brachos should not happen that day. Why? What's the distinction he's making? Sheval Tasa. You don't want to observe Avelus, you don't want to have people come into your house and sitting on the floor and all that stuff, whatever is going to involve. Okay, so we're okay with that. But to do something active that would be a contradiction to Avelus, like partying, that we can't do because it's only Sheval Tasa.
About the wedding.
Sorry?
About the wedding.
The wedding was before. The wedding you did before the funeral. So, although it was what declared about that also, but still, that's the Pashas, the wedding happens before this. The Rashba doesn't have that condition. The Rashba just says, Akiras Davar Min HaTorah, and that's the end of the story. So what's the difference between the two of them? Rebbe Chanan talks about this. So what's the difference between the two of them? The Ran understands Sheval Tasa. This is all question number two. The Ran understands Sheval Tasa. That's a question of behavior. So when it comes to Sheval Tasa here, we have to say it means don't do active things like partying. You can sit back and ignore the Avelus, but don't do anything active. While the Rashba is saying, no, it's about categories. Avelus may involve practically things that you should not do, but as a concept, as a category, it's a mitzvah saseh, a positive mitzvah lehisabel. So therefore, the rabbis just remove the whole thing. They took away the positive mitzvah. And that takes away its prohibitions too. It takes away all the negative rules that would come with it. So there's no need to distinguish. So you see that the Ran and the Rashba, as Rav Chanan points out, are arguing about this second category. Okay, so far so good? Everyone follow? So now here to add a little more geschmackheit to this. Seems like the Rashba is l'shitaso in at least two other places. Because the Rashba also comments in Masechus Rosh Hashanah. There's some discussion about what does the Isser of Baal Tosef prohibit. We're not allowed to add on to the Torah. What does that mean? So says the Rashba, I'll tell you what it doesn't mean. I'll tell you what's not a violation of Baal Tosef. To do a mitzvah twice is not Baal Tosef. How do I know that doing a mitzvah twice is not Baal Tosef? Sorry? Well, so that's the context in which he discusses this. So to do the mitzvah twice, how do I know that that's, how do I know from the Gemara that it's not Baal Tosef? It's because presumably Baal Tosef parallels Baal Tigra. Presumably it's the same kind of thing. So I can't subtract from the Torah. But we know we have a principle, the rabbis can tell us, Yesh koach lakar davar min haTorah. They can tell us not to do a mitzvah. So it must be that telling us not to do a mitzvah is not Baal Tigra, and therefore telling us to do a mitzvah twice is not Baal Tosef. So you can ask a question on his proof. What question could you ask? I think Rabbi Chanan discussed this also, if I remember correctly. You could say, well, why is that such a big deal? Once the rabbis are being ochre at Davar Min haTorah by telling you not to do this mitzvah, let them be ochre Baal Tigra also. Maybe it would have been Baal Tigra, but we already know the rabbis are removing a mitzvah here, so maybe they addressed Baal Tigra the same way. So what do you see from the Rashba? No, they can't. They can't touch Baal Tigra. Why not? Because Baal Tigra is a lo sase. So even though it's a lo sase, even though it plays out passively, it would just not do something, behaviorally, that would be Shev Al Tasa. But it's categorized as a lo sase, therefore that's not going to work. So you see, it's the Rashba l'shitaso, the Rashba by our Avelus question, said they can just throw out Avelus because Avelus is all a mitzvah sase. We view it as the category, not about what kind of behavior it involves. So the flip side is true by Baal Tigra. Even though Baal Tigra would only involve passive behavior, but it would be a violation of a lo sase, and a lo sase they can't touch. So it's the Rashba l'shitaso, the other half of the Rashba. Everyone follow that? Yes, sir.
Just back to the Avelis case, though. Mm-hmm. Let's say the Chagim delayed Avelis.
Mm-hmm.
So the day one is no longer the rest either.
That's what it seems like. Yeah.
Maybe the rest of you seem to have 8 days of Avelis. It's not necessarily like this day.
Yeah, the parameter, the halacha, it's hard to also fit in because the halacha, we don't follow this view. Right, so we don't assume that the first day is Daraisa. So the question is all according to that sheet, the Rambam and the Rif, that we don't follow. So to ask from Halacha L'maisa, it's a little hard to use that as the premise because we're working off the view that the whole thing is Drabban. So that's why it's hard to address.
Did you say that?
We say it's all Chazal, Hemamru, that Chazal decided how the mitzvah should be performed since they set it up in the first place. That's as far as our practice today. So it's hard to use that to address this. So I'll tell you a third point, then maybe we will dab mincha. Unless there are any other pressing questions to address, but you can contact me anytime between now and tomorrow with any further questions. But I'll just add one other point, l'shitaso. So I mentioned, when we were doing this the first time, but we didn't go into it, the Gemara in Gittin about Prusbul. The Gemara discusses that Prusbul seems to affect Torah law, not the way it's usually misunderstood. People think that Prusbul is an example of the rabbis changing Torah law, because by Torah law you have to cancel your loans, come the Shemitah year, and Prusbul is a way around it. And there's a lot that's built on that. Oh, if the rabbis can do that here, they can do it anywhere, etc., etc. But the Gemara says not that way. The Gemara in Gittin makes it clear that Prusbul is used because Shemitah nowadays is the Rabban. So Prusbul is not itself a undermining of Torah law. It's only used because Shemitah is the Rabban. But the Gemara says, hold on a second, that bothers us. Shemitah's Drabbanan? How could you have a Drabbanan Shemitah? Now, it's one thing if we were just talking about Shemitah's Karkos. We're talking about not working the land. Okay, so maybe Chazal can tell us not to work our land when the Torah didn't make such a requirement. But not paying back loans, Shmitas Ksafin, that's a big problem. You're telling me that by Torah law, there's a debt. And by rabbinic law, we don't have to pay the debt. So as Rashi asks over there in the Gemara, Rashi explains the question, doesn't that mean the rabbis are telling us to violate Lo Sigzal? Right? The rabbis telling us not to pay back our debt. Aren't they telling us to violate the Torah prohibition of Gezel? So the Gemara has two answers. One answer, this is a topic we discussed, is Hefker, Bezdin, Hefker. The rabbis have the ability to redefine these things. But the other answer, just tersely presented in the Gemara, is Sheval Tasa Adif. That because Sheval Tasa, somehow that's how it works. So if we're saying that's a reference to this, Yesh Koach Lachar Dovmer Torah V'Sheval Tasa, so then that's part of our second question here, right? Because we're talking about something which seems like it's called Gezel, it's called a Lo Sase, but you would do it passively. You just wouldn't pay back a loan. So it's going to be important, question number two. Are we defining things by your behavior, your simple failure to pay back a loan? In which case, okay, you can invoke the Yesh Koach Lachar Dovmer Minatorah. Or are we talking about something that's a kumvase, because it involves a lav of Lo Sigzal, even though it's passive, and you can't invoke Yesh Koach Lachar Dovmer Minatorah. So this Gemara seems to be a problem for the Rashba, because we just established in the two examples that the Rashba is going to say it's all categorical. If it's a lav, you can't do it. If it's an essay, you can. So here, if it's a lav, how does it work? So I remember many years ago, I was learning this Gemara with my then Chavrusa, Rabbi Werblowski Shlita, if you know him. And we were bothered by, how is this Rashba going to work, L'shitaso, and these other points. So we had a brilliant idea. Want to know what it was? We opened up the Rashba in Gittin to see what he says. So if you look in the Rashba in that Gemara, he has a different interpretation of the Gemara. You see that he has to read it differently, which makes sense, L'shitaso, that it's not invoking Yesh Koach Lachar Dovmer HaTorah, because L'shitaso is not going to work. L'shitaso, it can't be Oker Olah. So, again, this is all just very elegant. You see, this Chakira all ties into all the three reasons tying into each other. And this question, looked at by itself, you can find three examples of ramifications of this second question, where in each one of the three, the Rashba is a player. L'shitaso, understanding that we view it categorically, ase or lo sase, as opposed to the other way of asking, which it could have been about behavior, passive versus active behavior. Okay, everyone feels prepared for tomorrow? All right, so we're looking forward. I will see you at your appointed times, but first we'll daven. Who wants to volunteer daven?
The rabbi doesn't really fit so well either, because the rabbi on the one hand says it's the behavior of the article.
Right.
At the same time, he says it's okay.
Uh-huh.
We were trying to connect.
No, he says it's not okay.
The rabbi says it's not okay.
Right, it's the rabbi says that the myth is still there. Talk
to him. Right. No, but parts are
well, the right thing is all the right. Yeah, the right is still there. Okay, you guys standing up most?